If you were given choice between money on the one hand or wisdom on the other, which one would you take? Hi, this is Slavko Stefanovic from Walla Walla College School of Theology. Welcome to Probe, our weekly radio program that focuses on biblical topics and discussions. Today we are continuing our series of topics based on the book of Ecclesiastes. To help us explore this challenging book, I have invited two of my colleagues to join me in the discussion, Dr. Anthony Abbey, Chair of the Computer Science Department at Walla Walla College, and Professor Jean-Paul Grimaud, Chair of Modern Languages Department, also at Walla Walla College. Gentlemen, welcome, and thank you for your willingness to help me. I also appreciate the help of Suzanne, who is our technical assistant here in the studio. Ecclesiastes 7, Wisdom as a Shelter. Proverbs 4:7 says, "Wisdom is supreme, therefore get wisdom. Though it cost all you have, get understanding." In this way, certain books of the Bible exalt wisdom and personify it as a wise lady who calls on people to make right choices in life. Biblical writers describe wisdom through a number of metaphors. In Ecclesiastes 7, for example, it is compared to a shelter or shade that provides protection, relief, and comfort from the hot sun. In contrast to material possessions that do not last long, wisdom preserves the life of the one who possesses it, Ecclesiastes 7:12. As I look at the first six verses, I'm constantly thinking, Jean-Paul, of what you have just mentioned about Ecclesiastes 7. Please share your feelings, your impressions about this chapter with us. I think it's needed.
Yeah, I found it the most confusing chapter because it's so contradictory. It's so, it mimics life in a way, in its complexity. And I was not familiar with the structure, the way he expresses ideas, and so I don't have much to say. Maybe it will come later, but
the earlier part of Ecclesiastes seems to be a coherent discussion, a presentation of of empirical information. Here it's a collection of Proverbs.
And we have been using that, all of this, you know, the organization of this book and you know, these traits as a, what do we call it, as a parable of life, an analogy to what life is all about. When we are kids, or when we were kids with a normal childhood, let's say, life very often did make sense. But as we go through this book, you know, we learn indeed life is so unpredictable. Sometimes from one moment to the next, things go in a way in which we had never foreseen. And maybe that's what we should keep in mind. And that this is not like a consolation prize, but we do come back to that text. And there is something about it. The book of Ecclesiastes speaks about the mystery of life, difficulties, sense in life, and so on. And sometimes in its form, we can also see all that frustration. Can we use that word? Is that too strong, Anthony?
No, absolutely not.
Yeah. So the teacher, at times, was
frustrated.
Yes. Yeah. So what is he saying this time? A good name is better than fine perfume, and the day of death better than the day of birth.
It might depend on the name you have.
Is it right at times to look at life through the eyes of a pessimist?
We need all the perspectives to help us maintain a balance. And I think as we work through this particular chapter, as we move toward the latter half, there comes this emphasis on balance. In the result of the Enlightenment, the period that we call the Enlightenment in the Western tradition, there is this notion of progress and things getting better and better. It's not necessarily a realistic view of life. And looking for a balance is more in harmony with an Oriental tradition, particularly in the Taoist and Confucian world. And I think it's certainly present here in this chapter.
When I said earlier that I am very confused, listen, let's read one verse here, 28. While I was still searching but not finding, I found one upright man among a thousand, but not one upright woman among them all. Wow, what a statement.
Yes, I find that problematic.
Gentlemen, shall we deal with that right now, or we can come back to it later? Why don't we deal with that right now? Because it is a verse that I have heard people quote time and again. And, well, you have asked a difficult question, and my duty as a professional is to explain the Bible and vindicate the statements of the Bible. And I will try to do it. Will you let me do it? And
sure.
you be the judges.
Yeah, sure.
Now, before that, Anthony, you wanted to say something.
Oh, I was just going to say that in my understanding of that particular time in history, it was strongly patriarchal in nature, and women were property in many ways. And I can certainly see a woman needing to use all her wiles to survive. And so here's this man wanting to control things, and he's finding these women wiggling out from underneath his control and being rather frustrated with this.
Mm-hmm.
But still,
he's helping me. He's helping
still,
me.
Even in a patriarchal system, saying that your own maybe woman is not upright. I don't see any value in that. So.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, in the culture that I come from, where a mother as someone especially valued in the society, in the family, it is offensive. So here is my thesis.
Okay.
If we look at verse 20, it says, "There is not a righteous man on earth who does what is right and never sins." Let's put the two together.
Yes.
Is there a contradiction? Apparent, yes. And this is the thesis that I have. Let me see, where do I... verse 29 now, if you allow me. One more verse. "This only have I found, God made mankind upright, but men have gone in search of many schemes." Could it be that verse 28 was something that the teacher discovered during his search? It's a quote that he found while he was doing his research. What was he looking for? For someone upright, right? And his conclusion is that there is no one upright. However, he came across a statement that there can be found at least one upright man among 1,000, but not a woman, and so on. And what does he say in the concluding verse? "I found in the end this, God made mankind upright." Men and women were created in the beginning, and that's how God can look at them. But what have the people done? They have proposed all kinds of interesting ideas, which may be all right, but are not necessarily in accordance with God's original plan and how God looks at us. In summary, I believe what he's trying to say here is that at first, when God created the humankind, male and female, he made them as perfect. And we know what has happened because of sin in this world and so on. God still looks at human beings as sinful, right? But he looks at man and woman the same way. However, people get interesting ideas that one gender is better than the other. What grade do you give me for this defense of equality of genders?
It's a very good point, but still we have this statement in there.
Yes, so could it be that we should put it in the quotation marks, you know, when he says, "I came across the statement that says men are better than women." And he says, but, you know, in the end, verse 29, he says, "People get all kinds of interesting ideas. I prefer to rely on what I learn about God's creation of the humankind." I'm also interested in what Anthony has to say about this.
Well, you've put me on the spot. I was actually wanting to go in a slightly different direction.
Oh, all right.
But I think that's a helpful way to look at that. But it is always troubling when one has to explain Scripture. Because there are competing explanations, and then we have to judge between the competing explanations rather than the text itself. So with that, I'll go back to verse 20, where it says, "There is not a just man upon the earth that doeth good and sinneth not." Mm-hmm. Now, we have a statement from the New Testament, something along the same sorts of line, but I would say that even good intentions, the best of intentions, the best of actions, have negative effects, unpredictable effects. Hmm. We can live our lives as good, honest, upright people and still cause pain and agony for someone or something, because we don't have enough resources necessarily to go around. I occupy some land with my house. Nobody can grow crops where my house sits. So there is this natural competition, and it has good and negative effects.
Personally, I'm glad I live in a culture of free interpretation in terms of discourse and literary analysis, because that's helpful. Mm-hmm. So we don't have to take that statement, you know, at the first degree. Mm-hmm. And we can, I mean, anybody, you, I, and other people can interpret, you know, in their own way or the best way possible.
Hmm. Well, here is another saying, probably equally intriguing. Is this a quotation that he found in the library during his search? Do not be over righteous, neither be over wise. Why destroy yourself? Are spiritual people expected to live a balanced life? How do we understand this statement? And I like to view myself as spiritual, sorry for saying it, and I would like to be balanced, and I think that that's the ideal in life. But then I look at young people, and they like extreme sports. If I take them for an ice cream, they go for extreme ice cream or something like that. Balance in life is, once again, are spiritual people expected to live a balanced life?
I hope so.
I hope so as well.
I've made a statement that it's helpful to have many points of view. And I would argue also that it's important to see people who are living an unbalanced life, maybe too spiritual, that they've removed themselves from society or protected themselves from reality with some sort of scheme. And seeing that example helps me to aim for the middle, to avoid mm-hmm. the mistakes that I would see somebody has made. And I think you can make the mistakes on both sides.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But who sets the standards when this, regarding this statement, do not be over-righteous, neither over-wise? What are the standards?
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll have to stop at this point. And in concluding, I would like to say that as he tried to find answers to life's difficult questions, the author of Ecclesiastes goes back to the beginning of times when the world was perfect as it came out of the Creator's hand. Back then, life was harmonious and balanced. It is sin that has polarized somewhat things in this world. I would like to thank both Dr. Anthony Abbey and Professor Jean-Paul Grimaud for their valuable contributions, as well as Suzanne for her expertise in helping us in the studio. Please join us next week as we continue to explore the messages from the biblical book of Ecclesiastes. Thank you all for tuning in. For Probe, I'm Zdravko Stefanovic.
You've been listening to Probe, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla College and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194 or email us at probe@wwc.edu. Thanks for listening. We'll be here next week at this time with Probe.